Welcome to After Dark with Rob and Andrew on America Out Loud, available on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, or Apple Podcast. And as always, you can head on over to the website AmericaOutLoud.com and check out the articles and podcasts and share those on social media. We have a big show today with host of Sustainable Life and best-selling author Joshua Spodek. And we've got a lot to talk about with him. But first off, how are you doing tonight, Rob?
I'm doing good, with the exception of a few, allergies that are coming in because of the weather is just, that's changing. I don't know if it's because of climate change or it's just, spring is in the air. And in May, usually people suffer from allergies. And I'm one of those individuals. So as you guys hear me talk tonight, you might notice that I'm sounding high, and then gradually my voice will get deeper and deeper and deeper, the baritone. And I kind of like that effect, and that real deep, rich voice. But it only happens, unfortunately, when my allergies flare up. Other than that, it's like a high pitch. But who knows, like I said, I just want to make you guys aware of that, just in case you notice that my voice starts getting deeper. But I'm glad to have Josh Spodek on, and he's going to talk to us about sustainable life. It's rather interesting. I've been doing a lot of reading on it and what he's doing. And the stories that he will hopefully share with us tonight, I'm hoping that you guys will find interesting. One of the things that I noticed that he has done, and I hope I get this right, if I'm not, he'll probably correct me, is that he went an entire year without throwing away any garbage.
What?
Yeah. And when he did, it was a small little, wasn't a plastic bag, but I think a brown bag. The other thing I found out is that he unplugged his refrigerator. I don't know how that turned out, but we're going to find out. So he's a very interesting guy. Some of the things that, that he's doing that I don't think I could do, to me, reminds me of prehistoric time. And I like modern conveniences. And of course, that's the way I look at it. He probably views it some other way. But Andrew, do you think you could go a year without emptying your garbage?
No, I can't even go a week without emptying my garbage. Go through quite a few over here. But yeah, what I really like about Josh is, even though he's very passionate about climate change, is he's not the type of guy to shove it down your throat. Or he's also not the type of guy like John Kerry, who's going to preach about climate change and then you're going to see him on a private jet flying somewhere. He actually lives it in his daily life. And we're very excited to hear that tonight. And without further ado, let's bring in our guest, college professor and author of Leadership Step by Step, Joshua Spodek. How are you doing tonight, Josh?
Very good. Glad to be here. And I'm smiling because for me, not producing garbage is really, it's more to me about eating fresh fruits and vegetables instead of getting canned and boxed and bottled stuff, and getting to know my farmer, getting to know, getting a lot closer with my family. My mom grew up on a farm, so learning how to live closer to where the food's coming from. And I know it sounds to most people, and I used to throw out my garbage once a week, and it took a long time to get to once every 2 weeks, and then once every month, and then once every 3 months, once every 6 months. And each time along the way, learning a little bit more of how to cook from scratch, how to, like I'm looking right now, I now make vinegar from scratch, for example. I get apples, chop them up, and that way I don't have to get a vinegar bottle.
How are you able to, like, a year, what are you buying or what aren't you buying so that it's only a year? Wow, what are you doing that we're not doing? Because we're all humans and we accumulate stuff. Is your life, have you made your life that simplistic? And how long did it take you, like you said, to get to that stage? And was it difficult? Tell us about sustainable life. Is this all a part of sustainable living? What is the purpose? What is the mission statement? Are there goals? Is there something that you're trying to achieve? Talk to us, Josh.
Sure. Lots of questions. And I'll try to start from the beginning, because I didn't intend for this to happen. What happened, let's see, if you go a few years back, well, if you go way back, I have a PhD in physics. So my science is pretty strong. I helped build a satellite with NASA, and it's orbiting the Earth and taking data still. And that was over 20 years ago. then in the intervening years, I started a couple of businesses, got an MBA, and started teaching leadership as something that I just didn't know that there was something to learn. I went to business school, and then I learned that there were classes in leadership. Found that I didn't think it was taught as well as it could be. It was taught very reading and writing papers, analyzing stuff. And I think it's more effective to learn through experiential learning, project-based learning. So if you had met me 10 years ago, I was going around New York talking to incubators, having started companies as a total geek myself and not having social emotional skills as an entrepreneur, having left academia by this point, I was going to teach leadership. I'm in Manhattan, and it turned out that NYU saw what I was doing and they said, we're going to hire you. And so they hired me and I started teaching with NYU, and my courses became the books. And okay, I was all set to maybe start a program in leadership experiential learning at NYU. And I did something that I did not intend to become big in my life, which was that, you know, at the time, if you'd asked me, I would have said, what one person does doesn't really make that much of a difference. It's really, if you want to change culture, if you want to change our environmental behavior, that's governments and corporations are the only ones that are big enough to make a difference. And besides, the important things to do are electric cars and fusion and things like that. Nonetheless, one time I was in my kitchen and I looked down at my garbage and I look at it and I think, well, this garbage, I cannot say anyone else took responsibility. This is my responsibility, and personal responsibility is important to me. So I thought, okay, maybe for fixing the whole world, I can't do anything, but this is going to end up on some beach somewhere. Even if it gets into a landfill, it's still, this is my pollution. I'm responsible for it. And I thought, I wonder if I could go for a week without buying any packaged food. I didn't know if I would make it. In fact, I didn't think I could. And looking back, probably every single meal I ever ate had some packaged food in it. And actually, I didn't know how to start. It took me 6 months of analyzing and planning. I was like, what'll I do? Until one day I just said, I'm not going to die. Start now. Just go for it. Went to the store, went to the shelves, looked at the shelves, and felt really helpless because I'm like looking at all the boxes and cans and bottles and thinking, well, what can I do? And, you know, Ivy League degrees don't really help you figure out how to cook food from scratch. So I look over at the vegetables and the fruit. I'm like, I guess that's all I can get. So for the 2 weeks, I just got those things. I have a bulk section at the store near me, so I could get dried beans and put them in containers that I brought. And for the first time in my life, I boiled beans on the stove. Like, I never did that before. And for the next 6 months, I made it 2.5 weeks without buying any packaged food. I was finishing stuff that was on my shelves, so I was still having some packaged food. And I thought, at the end of the 2 weeks, let me see if I can keep this going. Again, no plan for this to involve anybody else but myself. Just a personal challenge to see what I could do. After about a few months, for a while, I'm just having, I got to say, really bland food. I'm like steaming broccoli, putting a little salt and pepper on it, boiling beans, not really having very delicious food. But over the next several months, I don't like bland. I do like delicious, but I wanted to keep that constraint on. So I was still buying a little bit of packaged food. I still do buy a little packaged food. But my food started tasting better and better and better. And I learned how to shop at the farmer's market and how to buy in season and get to know the farmers so they give me discounts. And I actually spend less money now than I did before on food. And a big change happened that I didn't expect to happen, which was that I thought it was going to be deprivation, sacrifice. I thought it was going to be inconvenient. I thought it was going to cost more. And I have to say, for the first couple of months, it was, until I got the hang of it. And then it became more delicious, saving money, more convenient. And this was pre-pandemic, so I was inviting people over all the time. It was a great shift. And more than the... So I at that time, I went from maybe throwing out a load of garbage once a week to once every 2 weeks, once every month at this point. It took me several years to reach where it would take me half a year or a year. The big shift was not... I mean, there was a big shift of how much garbage I produced. And that means I'm not littering other people's worlds. I'm taking responsibility for my waste. But the bigger shift was mental. Why did I think it was going to be such a horrible outcome when actually... Getting to know my farmers, getting to cook from scratch. It was by the values that are important to me of knowing my community, enjoying my food, delicious. It was better. And so I asked myself, why did I think it was going to be terrible when it wasn't? And what other things do I think might be terrible that aren't? And what other places in my life can I make the shift? Once I found joy, fun, freedom, community, connection, family, meaning, purpose, At that point, I realized I couldn't find anyone who was sharing those emotions. Everyone else was always saying it's deprivation and sacrifice. I don't want to do stuff that's deprivation and sacrifice. I want to do stuff that's fun and freedom and community and things like that. Since that voice wasn't out there, I felt this is something that I can bring to people and feel good about sharing, not imposing, not telling people what to do. People will hear different things in what I say, but I believe that I'm inviting people to join me in something that I enjoy. And if they don't want to, it's a free country. There's plenty of other people I can work with. So I'm trying to share that it's really enjoyable. And only in the past couple of generations have we lived where, you know, go a few generations back, and since the dawn of humanity, you've always had trees. We could always go and walk in nature. And in the past generation or so, large numbers of population don't have nature in their lives. And I'm finding I really enjoy it. So yeah, when you talk about someone flying around and saying not to fly, or polluting and saying not to pollute, it kills me because I feel like they're shooting themselves in the foot and they're not enjoying the great joy that's out there that I'm enjoying. And I'd love to talk to Carrie and help walk him through. I think there's joy to be had. I mean, I don't know the guy. I haven't met him yet, but I think there's joy to be had. And I think it would make him more effective in what he wants to do. And, you know, I also have to be open when I say, I think I can make him more effective. When I talk to someone, I have to be open that I could be wrong. I mean, just because I like it doesn't mean that it's more effective. It doesn't mean that it works for another person. So I try to learn from people that I disagree with. I don't know. I talked a bunch there. I don't know if I answered more or less than you were looking for.
Well, no. So just to make sure that I'm understanding, is that the genesis behind a sustainable life? Is it a program? Is it an idea? Is it a movement?
Yeah. So this sustainable life is the podcast that began because I realized that my message and my behavior was resonating with a lot of people, and I wanted to reach more people. No one has to listen to the podcast, but it's there for people who want to listen to it. It began when I was talking to a friend of mine at a cafe. We were just chatting, and I mentioned to him how I pick up at least one piece of trash every day. I've done this every day since 2017. It doesn't actually clean the world. It just moves trash, but it's less likely if it's on the street. If I put it in the trash can, it's more likely to make it into a landfill at least than the ocean. Plus, it cleans my neighborhood. And I just mentioned it to him, and he says, you know what? I'm going to pick up 10 pieces of trash a day for 30 days. And I didn't say anything to him about that. I mean, I was just telling him something I did, and he took it on himself. A month later, I asked him how it went. He said two big things. One was that at the beginning, he felt weird picking up trash because people might see him. At the end, he felt weird passing by trash without picking it up because the experience changed him. The other big thing was he said, once he started doing it, he knows he's not changing the world, but he was making a difference, at least to his neighborhood. And he thought, what else can I do since I'm enjoying doing this? I know it sounds weird, enjoying picking up trash, but it's oddly rewarding, especially people stop me on the street and like they thank me, which is kind of cool. Anyway, so he thought, what else can I do? And he looked stuff up and he found on his own that eating meat makes a difference. And so he decided on his own to half his meat intake. And he's a lifter. He goes to the gym all the time. So he has to make sure his macros work out. So it wasn't like a trivial thing for him to do. I never talked to him about diet. He did that on his own because he wanted to, because his action led him to discover things. So the podcast was for me to bring people on and walk them through asking their values and asking them if they care to act on their values, not my values, not someone else's values, not telling them what they should do. I avoid as much as I possibly can telling them or even offering them suggestions of what they can do. I let them come up with it. I walked them through a process that took me a lot of episodes to get to. And I find that when people act not on extrinsic motivation, but intrinsic motivation, they do it for their reasons. And big or small, that's not the point. If they do it because they like it, then they find reward in it and they tend to keep doing it afterward. And so people, listeners can go on and hear leaders, like I've had McKinsey's 3-time global managing director, a Super Bowl winner, 2 Olympic gold medalists, all these best-selling authors and people that you know, I mean, famous people. And a recent one was one of the stars of Baywatch. That was kind of cool. And listeners can hear people that they've heard of deciding to act for their own reasons. And some people come back and say it didn't work. But by and large, they come back and they say, actually, what I love the most is they'll come back and they say something like, oh, it's kind of neat. you know, I realized that I could recycle some stuff that I couldn't before. Or they'll say, you know, they did their thing. And then they'll say something like, you know, my son noticed that I was doing something he'd been talking about for years. And I don't even know how long my son was telling me this. This is Casper Craven, was a guy who was on my podcast. And he said, my son has been telling me for years about recycling, and I just wasn't paying attention. And I didn't realize how much he cared and how much it meant to him, and now how much it means to me. And I connected with my son more. I had Larry Yatch, a Navy SEAL, who committed to picking up beach garbage with his two sons and his wife. His description to me was, as a warrior, as a Navy SEAL, he has to have at the ready certain emotions, because if someone is down, he has to go into the line of fire and do what it takes for the team. Well, now he's a civilian. He's no longer an active SEAL now. And like the three emotions that he had as a warrior are not what you want with a wife and kids. So he said, the way he put it was, if emotions were crayons, he had like three colors. And now he's realizing his wife has like a box of 128 colors, and he's got like eight, and he's going up to 16. And this experience of spending time on the beach with his sons and his wife, picking up garbage, woke himself up to new emotions. And what I said before about that, we haven't lived with nature being so distant. There's something about nature that maybe it's not universal, but I find it's the case with a lot of people, that spending time walking in the trees, cooking from scratch, eating fresh fruits and vegetables. I love to forage. I know where some berry trees are, and I love to go get, actually in June, the June berries come out and they're like super delicious. Getting to know my farmer, this stuff is very rewarding. And this is the heart of it, is these emotions. And the podcast is designed to bring about these emotions rattle off my tongue now. Joy, fun, freedom, community, connection, meaning, purpose. It works not every time, but works pretty well. You notice I'm not saying deprivation or sacrifice or telling people what to do. So that's a lot of what this Sustainable Life, the podcast, is about.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people find your lifestyle interesting, Josh. Something that I want to follow up on is how you do not own a refrigerator and you only go through one garbage a week. How do you do that exactly? Is it every time that you want to eat a lunch or a dinner that you have to go to the grocery store? And I assume that you use reusable bags. How is that accomplished?
Well, you changed it a bit from, Rob had it right. I've unplugged my fridge. So that was, a lot of this I feel like is like a performance art. And there's an artist, the details matter. Martha Graham, the great dancer, once said, either the foot is pointed or it is not. No amount of dreaming will point it for you. And when you get to the details, that's where the art is to me. It's not like, so for example, with the fridge, how did it work? I'm always discovering new things. Most people won't unplug their fridges, but what that's led me to discover was, let me go back to what got me started on it. I was reading an article with no intent of going anywhere with this. It was an article on how other cultures tend to ferment food more. It was about Vietnam. So it's a very hot, humid country, and they don't use refrigerators nearly as much as we do. So they tend to ferment stuff. I had never fermented anything before. You know, I've eaten pickles, but that's about it. And I thought, I wonder if, at that time, the fridge was probably the appliance that used the most electricity in my apartment at the time. So I'm sitting there reading the article. I'm thinking, I wonder if I could ferment, and I wonder if I could get by with using the fridge less. And you remember how I mentioned with the avoiding packaged food, it took me 6 months to get started. That thinking of analyzing and planning, but not actually doing, I could feel that coming on. And I thought, I'm not going to do this 6 months. I just spontaneously, this is December 2019, walked over and unplugged the fridge and said, I'm going to figure it out when it happens. I'm not going to like try to solve the problem before it happens. So suddenly I realized, okay, the freezer, what's in the freezer? I got to either eat really quick or figure out what to do with it. Same with the stuff in the fridge. So that was December 2019. And I made it a few months. And what I did is winter in New York City. And that meant since I'm eating local vegetables, winter vegetables are beets and rutabaga and carrots and parsnips. So it's root stuff that doesn't go bad very quickly. It's not like spinach that goes bad really quickly. Plus my windowsill is really cold. So one, I learned how to, most stuff I'd put on the windowsill, I put on the windowsill. I finished everything I could really quick that would have gone bad. And then I started learning how to ferment. So I could make cabbage, sauerkraut, and a few other things that, so I didn't need the fridge. Then, so I did it 3 months that first time, and it was kind of interesting. Then the following year, which is to say November 2020, I decided to do it a little bit earlier and see how long I could go. I'm now just about 5.5 months and into the spring, and I'm fermenting a lot more and making chutneys and all sorts of, and like some stuff that was in the fridge, some oranges, I stuck them in vodka and ate some really good vodka infused, orange infused vodka. And it's just seeing what I can do. I'm curious. It's, to me, it's like, I don't know. It's like going to the gym and lifting heavier weights or discovering new things. So yeah, it's not, there's another article I should also mention. There's an article that was talking about power grids. This is before the Texas stuff. It was, I don't know when I was reading it, probably a year ago. And it was saying how a power grid, in the US, we have something like 99.9% uptime. A few hours a year, maybe a day out of the year, people might lose power. And it's very rare and it doesn't happen very much. To go to 99.99 is like a 50% increase in cost, plus a huge increase in, you got to have all these peaker plants, which are like the most polluting. It's very, very expensive. It's a big tax burden. It's a big pollution burden to get more and more uptime. But it goes the other way too. To go from 99.9 to 99% is a giant savings in cost, right? This is our taxes, pay for all the stuff, or our utility bills pay for this stuff. And there's a lot of extra pollution that comes for it. If we were to live a more resilient lifestyle, most of the world, you know, power goes out more than in the United States, although some places have a lot higher uptime than we do. If we were to accept a bit of power going down sometimes, we could save like 50% of our power. I don't know. Don't hold me to those numbers. I don't know what the cost would be, but I know that it's a big savings. And so I thought, well, maybe I could try to live more resiliently. I tried it last year with this is before this time of turning off the fridge. I thought if we could live a more resilient lifestyle, we could save a lot of money and pollute a lot less and use renewables a lot more. And how bad is it not to have, you know, everything you want, anytime you want it, no matter who pays, you know, no matter what the consequences are to other people. I don't know if that's necessarily a better life. So I unplugged it this year again, and just to see how far I could make it. I don't think I'll make it a full 6 months because the weather's really warming up and I can't put stuff on the fridge anymore, by the window anymore. It's just exploring. It's figuring out, you know, people lived without refrigerators for hundreds of thousands of years around, you know, in all sorts of weather. How have I, am I, is my dependence on technology making my life better or worse? Is freedom and, you know, knowing, what's the other word? Knowing what to do, knowing how to make different vegetables, knowing how to prepare things in different ways. Is that expanding my life? Because so far it has been. I to feel dependent and not free doesn't sit well with me. Being independent and not imposing my pollution on others, stewardship, acting in service of others, especially those who are helpless to defend themselves against something that I do that might hurt them. That enriches my life.
Yeah, for myself personally, and a lot of people listening to our network, climate change probably is not at the top of their list and issues, but it is something that you're very passionate about. And I always like listening to people who talk about things that they're passionate about. I think Greta Thunberg kind of hurts the message because she's kind of a polarizing figure and almost like a provocateur. But politically, Josh, is there anyone that you think does do a good job of relaying the climate change message that you're trying to put out?
If there were, I wouldn't be writing my book. I'm not really aware of many people who, there's a triple combination of experience that I think are almost essential to lead in this area. One is you have to have experience leading in some way. Another is that you have to have experience and knowledge of science. It's very easy for someone to be a great leader, to lead in a direction that sounds nice, but is actually counterproductive. It's also, there's a lot of people who know science, but don't know how to lead. And they go out lecturing and telling people what to do and thinking, oh, if you knew this, if you knew what I knew, then you would do it. But that's not the case. You can give people facts and figures and, you know, tell someone who smokes about lung cancer. They're not going to, that alone won't do it. And there's one other, there's a third thing, which is actually having lived it oneself, to live by the values. If you're trying to lead someone to values that you yourself are not living, you, first of all, I mean, you sound like a doctor who drinks and smokes, telling people not to drink and smoke. You don't have a lot of credibility. But there's two other big things that if you haven't done it yourself, you don't know what it takes to change. Let's just say for argument that there are people who do want to change. So there are people who question and don't want to change, but let's leave them aside for now. People who do want to change, if you think that just telling them the facts is going to do it, if you haven't done it, you don't know that what it takes to change habits is much less about giving people facts and figures or telling them what to do. It's much more about support, community, role models, especially ones who've been there before. And if you haven't done it, you can't offer that. And then the other thing is you don't know, you know that there's going to be some period of withdrawal when you give up. You know, I had to go through of eating very bland food, just as one example of a change in my life. But afterward, I learned, oh, it's much better. And I've been through that change. I've been to the mountaintop. I've seen the promised land on the far side. And if you haven't done it yourself, you can't, you can speak about that in the abstract, but that sounds hollow. So the triple set of experiences of leadership experience, science experience, and personal experience, having lived those values oneself. I'm not aware of many people who've done that, not on a national or global scale. And, you know, Greta is very young, and at 18, she sounds a lot more mature than I think I was at 18, but I don't remember because I'm really old now. But she hasn't had a whole lot of leadership experience. I don't know if she asked for it, but when someone calls for panic, that's what you say when you don't know anything better. But I'm not aware of anyone else, and I'm probably missing some people, but I don't know many people who have the triple combination that I think is essential. And part of the podcast and the book that it will come out soon, well, it's... my next book, I'm not sure exactly when the date will be when it comes out, but it's to teach people leadership skills, starting with personal leadership of themselves for people who want to, and particularly sustainability leadership.
Yeah, it seems like something that both sides agree with, both on the left and the right, is that they want to live in clean cities without garbage, and they want to have a clean environment. Seems like there should be some room to meet in the middle there. You're tuned into After Dark with Rob and Andrew, available on America Out Loud via iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or download the America Out Loud app to keep track of all the great shows. We will be back with more from guest Joshua Spodek.
In 2008, the amount of concentrated time people could spend on a task without becoming distracted was 12 seconds. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds, 1 second less than a goldfish. If you find yourself always distracted or having trouble recalling information, you're likely to fall behind in the demanding, fast-paced 21st century. In other words, brain performance is more critical now than ever. Boost your brain power with Healthy Cells Focus Plus Recall. Science-backed nootropics to sharpen focus, concentrate longer, enhance recall, improve mental speed, learn rapidly, and be more alert. It's a pill-free brain supplement made with maximum absorption technology, designed to feed our brains at the cellular level. Take it for a test drive. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Focus Plus Recall. That's HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
There was a time when Americans could rely on the Fourth Estate. Well, in these challenging times, the media is both reckless and complicit. AmericaOutloud.com. Top analysis from leading experts, articles, podcast, video, and 24/7 talk radio. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
We're back on After Dark with Rob and Andrew, and our guest is Josh Spodek. and we're talking to him about sustainable living, sustainable life. Now, during our first segment, Josh, you mentioned a couple of things that stood out to me. Number one, packaged foods, how you managed to avoid packaged foods, and it was a process. Meat, not in your diet, and that you do all of these things because you enjoy them, and personal responsibility. And you're not trying to get others to do it, but you know, you talk to them about it, and if they choose to do it, so be it. So could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I don't try to influence people who don't want it. There are a lot of people who say they care about the environment and would like to do something, but they feel like what they do won't matter, or that only governments and corporations can make a difference, or it's incumbent on the next generation, but not this generation. So if they then also sound like they're twisted up inside and they would like to change, then I like to help them. But if they don't want my help, I got other people to work with. And I don't want to impose on anyone. And as I said, I couldn't start this until I couldn't bring something to others that I hadn't yet first experienced myself that I liked. And if I hadn't challenged myself with that, no, avoiding packaging for a week, I might be, you know, teaching a big leadership program at NYU. It was almost, you know, a chance. I mean, it's front page news all the time, so it's not like I wasn't doing stuff, but the leadership part probably wouldn't have kicked in.
So what is it about, when you speak about leadership, and you've written a book about leadership, and Andrew mentioned in our last segment about Greta and her, you know, I guess, dire warnings about the world's going to be over. A lot of other people have predicted, I think it was Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the freshman representative, who said that, you know, within 12 years, you know, we could be looking at the country, you know, going away. Al Gore, one of the biggest proponents of climate change, had said way back when that what we're living right now, we shouldn't be living, because the world should have been over. So these people are coming out saying this as if though they are the subject matter experts, so to speak. And they want people to listen to them because of their stature, you know, where they've been, the vice president. You have a young girl who's saying this. And it's almost as if those society or a certain segment of society is saying, look at these people. They're telling you, you've got to trust them. You've got to believe them. But like you said, they're saying it, but are they leaders? Do they know what it takes to listen and to come around? You can scare people into action, but then after a certain period of time, if what you were scaring them on, if they don't see that it's happening, it's like, okay, next. So explain to us just a little bit about that leadership quality, what it takes. And as you said, if there were someone out there, you wouldn't be writing the book that you're writing. So what does it take when you say leadership? Are leaders born? Are they made? Can you become a leader? What qualities are needed? I know that's a lot to unpack.
Yeah. I'll talk about the leadership side. I think some of the things that you said about their interpretations or their message, I've heard different messages. So if we get to that, we'll get to that. But leadership to me, my working definition of leadership is to help people do what they already wanted to do, but haven't figured out how. So it is not exercising authority, although you can have authority and not lead. You can lead and not have authority. So it's nice if they go together, but they don't have to. So if someone doesn't want to do it, that's coercion. And maybe there's a place for that, but that's not what I'm doing. And there's an interesting interplay between politics and science, because there's science is you can do experiments and you can find stuff out. And that's not a matter of opinion. If you measure something and you get a certain reading, others may get a different reading another time. But in principle, you're looking for more and more measurements. Now, scientists are not politicians. And politicians, I don't want rules that are handed down, but I am a big fan of democracy. So if something through democratic means passes in a way that the populace believes is fair, I support that, because sometimes it goes my way and sometimes it doesn't. I've been on jury duty and I voted, you know, sometimes I vote one way and the jury goes the other way. And in politics, I'm affected by this. But I don't like the idea of someone saying the science is right and let's go around democracy and just make this happen. I think the things that a lot of scientists aren't particularly effective at influencing people or at they're very good at getting data and presenting the data. And I think that they're great at that. And I was very good at that. I think I was when I did it. But still, we have to go through democratic means to pass laws. If laws are passed through democratic means, I try to follow them. I mean, there are cases where people do nonviolent civil disobedience. I would like to think that if I were in the time of Nelson Mandela or Martin Luther King, that I would have sat at the lunch counter. But by and large, I think I don't want governments telling me what to do. But I do want to tell government what to do. I mean, at least with as far as I can vote. I'm not sure if that addressed what you were talking about. So I think a lot of people, when they have authority, they'll tend to exercise the authority. And if they have the authority and they're voted to have it, then there's a certain measure that they ought to do that. I mean, I do a lot of work with the military in West Point, and they have clear authority. You know, they have a chain of command, but that's the last thing that they want to rely on. So even if you have authority, I think it's much more effective if you don't rely on it.
So in getting people to understand the message of sustainability, what would be one of the pillars or attracting point to get them to stop, listen, and to think, to find out if there's something that they could do to make the world a better place? Like you said, you like the idea of personal responsibility. That's personal responsibility for you, that you aren't destroying the world. You're making sure that someone else can enjoy it. Others who don't think along those lines, or maybe they do, but they don't know how to manifest it. How do you get them to that point to see it?
Before I start, I don't know what their internal motivations are. So I have to start, as I believe this is, I mean, before I did any work on sustainability, one of the main things that I would teach in leadership is to behave and communicate in ways so the other person feels comfortable sharing what they care about. And in this case, what they care about, nature. So if you listen to the podcast, you'll hear that most of my guests, I ask them, what does the environment mean to you? And most people's first answer is what I call a cocktail party answer. They know that this is an area of judgment. And so they'll say something safe, like my children, or I mean, obviously they care about their children, but that's a very generic answer that's not really personal. They do care about their children, but they care about the environment before their children were born. They'll talk about polar bears or seals or, you know, the straw that got stuck in the nose of the tortoise, something like that. And then I say, but, you know, what about in your life? Like what, and I'm not going to go through the whole process, but usually what comes out is they will often share a story from in their life that's meaningful to them. It might be when they're a child and they went, like the Super Bowl winner who was on my podcast, a Philadelphia Eagle, he talked about how he would go fishing with his grandfather in catching salmon, and eventually the bottles would filled up the stream and it wasn't quite what it was before. And different people share something that's very meaningful to them. When that comes out, you can tell that it switches from the cocktail party stuff to something really meaningful. And almost always emotions will come out, and it might be awe and grandeur. It might be fear and uncertainty or doubt or this. I don't know what will come out. When it comes out, then that's how I can lead them, because I can help them act on the emotions that were there before I ever met them. And so I ask them, once that's come out, what's something you could do? Or I invite them. I don't impose on them. I invite them to think of something they could do to act on their personal experience, on what they've lived and what matters to them. People who grow up by the beach, it tends to be something beach related, sometimes water related. Like this one guy, he's a global C-suite of some major, major corporation, a big advertising, global advertising firm. And he told me about growing up as a boy, I think it was North Carolina. Anyway, he grew up on the beach, and he talked about how he loved being on the beach. And as he did a recent project, I think it was in India, where he was walking along the beach in India, and water splashed up on him, And he said that it was oily. The water had some oil in it. It was polluted. And he was in Singapore on another project. Something similar happened there. And so the joy and the family and the youth, the vibrancy of the early memories was mixed with this foreboding of what's happened now. And I talked to him about that. I mean, I'd listen because he's sharing something very meaningful to him, something very emotional. And then I said, I invite you to think of something you can do to act on that. And we're sitting at a conference table at their global headquarters in Midtown Manhattan. And as I say this to him, he looks down to his right and there's a plastic water bottle there. And he looks at it and he's like, I know that plastic comes from oil and that oil in the water. And he just said, you know what? I'm going to go without plastic bottles for a month. I forget how long. So I come back later. I had a meeting with one of the people in his staff and she says, what happened? Because he used to get crates of water bottles delivered every week or every month or however long. And now he's not. He's going to the water fountain and filling up his mug from there. So this is one little example of a major corporation. But I didn't, there's no way I could have guessed to talk to him about beaches and water and oceans and use that as a reason for him to avoid using water bottles. I lose in this particular style of leadership that I'm using for the podcast, I lose the direction. I can't force them to do what I think they should do or what is most important or anything like that. But what I get is they want to do it. And the first thing they do may be big and maybe small, but the second thing they want to do and it becomes bigger and bigger. So this is what I call, I mean, this is an illustration of leadership. I'm not managing them. I'm leading them. I'm evoking emotions or helping them reveal emotions and then giving them a way to act on what was already there. I'm helping them do what they already wanted to, but hadn't figured out how.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, just thinking of it on a broader term, is that these needs or wants or these abilities to do it is there and you're helping the individual find it. And I guess that would be the same approach on a job. The ability to achieve is there, but the person is unaware of it and you are helping them to find it, because if it is there and they find it, they will act upon it and the chances are they will continue to do it, as opposed to saying, you've got to do this, you've got to do it. And more than likely, they'll say, well, I don't want to do it, or there is a resistance of trying to get them to do it. Is that correct?
If I try to guess at what they're going to like, I'm never going to be on. I talked to one guy, he's from Kazakhstan, and he talked about growing up and there are all these apple orchards. Apparently, Kazakhstan, modern day Kazakhstan, is where humans first stumbled on the first apple trees, you know, the ones that were there before we were. And he said that there were strains of apples that don't exist outside of Kazakhstan. And some of them are now housing developments. They've been paved over. And some of those apples are gone forever. When I invite him to act on it, he came up with not taking taxis on Fridays. Now, there's no way I could have connected apple trees to not taking taxis. He did that, and that was meaningful to him. So yeah, I could not possibly have come up with known about the apples, because I don't know about Kazakhstan. It's kind of interesting to know now, little piece of trivia. But there's no way I could have connected apples to taxis, but he could. And you know, Eisenhower said, leadership is I'm not going to quote him perfectly, so look it up to get the quote right, but it's like, it's the art of getting the other guy to do your thing for his reason. There's a lot of people out there who feel twisted up. You know, maybe someone doesn't agree with climate change, doesn't think that climate change is happening. Nobody wants mercury in their fish. Nobody wants their kid to have asthma. There's something, maybe people look out and see Eden in our world today, but I think almost everyone has something inside them that they wish wasn't quite so polluted. They wish wasn't litter on the ground. There wasn't the smog in the air, the ozone hole. There's something that people generally want. They don't want to feel twisted up inside of something's happening and they're not doing anything. They don't want to feel powerless.
Right.
They don't want to feel helpless.
So what would you say to those individuals who would say that Earth will take care of itself? And we've had a guest on our show recently who we were talking about, you know, global warming, climate change and everything. And he had said, we made reference to the fires in California. And he pointed out to us, he said, everything that you're hearing now, if you go back 70 years ago, it's the exact same thing, but we never did anything to correct it then. So it goes back to someone saying the earth will take care of itself. It's a process of evolution, survival of the fittest, as Darwin had said. And although we think that we're doing our share in trying to drag it out, the inevitability, but things are going to change. What are your thoughts on that?
We said a few different things there. People can interpret data in lots of different ways. And if someone honestly interprets things in a different way, then all I can do is listen and maybe learn from them. A very good friend of mine, he talked about, this is before the podcast, I talked to him about environmental issues. And his view was that people have been saying for, since all of human history, people have said, the end is near, repent, listen. And it's, he interpreted it as they're always trying to get power. And, you know, people today, it sounds a lot like they did, sounded like 5,000 years ago, 10,000 years ago, and the earth doesn't seem over yet. And probably someone's just trying to get power for themselves by freaking people out. So I thought, oh, this is going to be easy. I'll just send him some, you know, some data. So I sent him some data and he wrote back and like, I don't know how he found this. He looked stuff up and he found that, you know, the data had been corrected. And I wrote back and said, well, yeah, data gets corrected. And he goes, yeah, but it's every time it changes, it always goes in one direction. And I looked up and I'm like, he's right. And I thought I had this like slam dunk here. And instead I have to learn from him. And I have to be humble. I have to be humble to the science, but I have to be humble to my own fallibility. So there might be, I mean, you're talking about someone that I haven't met. So I can't say, I don't know exactly what this person has said, but if there's something for me to learn from the person, there's something for me to learn from the person. So far it's been most people, there's, if I ask them what the environment means to them, unprompted, they'll tell me something that they're concerned about, they're worried about. And there's something disquiet in them. There was actually, if you listen to my episode with John Lee Dumas, he's like a big podcaster with Entrepreneur on Fire. And I asked him, what does the environment mean to you? And you'll hear him say, his answer is something like, really not a big deal to me, not a concern, which is kind of funny because, you know, at that time, the podcast was called Leadership in the Environment. I changed the name at one point. And to go on a podcast with environment in the title and say, oh, I don't really care about it. And as long as that was his answer, I couldn't go to the next stage of asking him if he could invite him to act on it because there's nothing for him to act on. So we went back and forth a bit. And then it came out that he lives near the beach and the beach, he goes for runs all the time. And on his way back from the run, he passes by the beach and there's always litter on the beach. Then when he talked about that and how much it pained him to see that, then I could talk to him about that problem. And he chose to pick up once a month for a year, he would bring a bag to the beach and clean up trash from the beach. He came up with that, not me. But had he not come up with that problem, I would have let it go. It just wouldn't help to impose on him. I wasn't going to tell him what to do or make up problems that he didn't see.
Okay. Another question that I have for you, going back to the way you live your life and just maintaining what you do on a daily basis. At this stage of the game, do you find it difficult to stay away from the packaged foods, not go out to eat, to make the meals at home? Like you said, you want to eat things that taste good. So if someone who's listening to you will say, wow, how is he able to do it? Does he not find this difficult? Does he slip? Or is he just straightforward? This is how I'm living my life.
It's the opposite of slipping. It's a little while ago, I met a friend in Union Square, and there's a place near there that has, it's like vegetarian sushi of some sort. And I knew she liked it. And so when I went to meet her, I brought with me my own container. And I said, hey, you want to get sushi? And so we go there and I say to them, can we get takeout sushi in this container? And the woman's like, yeah, I guess so, no problem. And so we waited outside the store and she brings it out to us and she's like, I wish everyone else did this. How come more people don't do this? So she liked it. And the woman who worked at the sushi place, that's the only time I've eaten out in like a long time. And there are times when, I mean, basically I like it more and more. I feel like one of the reasons people eat out a lot is they want to get cuisine from other cultures. Well, the past couple of months, I mean, now it's May, so the spring greens are coming in, but February, March, there haven't been any greens in the market for a while. And so I'm just having some sauerkraut, like that's my green leafy stuff. But then otherwise it's the root vegetables. Actually this year I started sprouting. Oh, I forgot to mention that. Yeah, I started sprouting mung beans and chickpeas. And that's given me some greens that are fresh because I grow them in my apartment. It's really, really easy and super cheap and tastes good. So this is like discovery. I feel that by finding out what cuisine I have to have here because I have to eat local stuff here, I feel it actually connects me more to, I don't know, someone in Senegal or Thailand, and I'm not eating their cuisine, but I'm more connected with them than if I just drop in and it's like I'm going to the zoo and just kind of like looking around for a bit. And that kind of travel doesn't appeal to me. It feels less connected, not more connected. This way, I mean, maybe after a couple decades, I'll get bored of eating local food, but people have lived on Manhattan for what, 10,000 years? And so far, it's only gotten better. I mean, yes, I don't have the appearance of variety that I used to, but you know, my favorite foods before in the restaurants around me, I like Mexican food and I like Thai food, but there's so much salt, sugar, fat in the restaurants. It's like rice covered, Mexican food is covered with cheese fat and Thai food is covered with coconut milk fat. Like I've been to Thailand, I've been to Mexico, and this is not that. This is like,
well, their food salt, is extremely sugar, spicy. I found their food extremely spicy when you actually go and visit.
Yeah, no, it's spicy, but also, and I couldn't handle the spices in Thailand. Like the Thai spice was insanity. I couldn't do that. But it was much, much more vegetables, much less of just plain rice. Here, it's like half the meal is rice. And then they put the sauce all over stuff, which to me, it doesn't have the richness and nuance and complexity of the cuisine there, but also that's in the vegetables because it's all covered up. Because I think it seems a lot of salt, sugar, fat, and convenience. And once my taste buds started to shift from, you know, I grew up eating Doritos and Ben and Jerry's, and I love the stuff. And now even an apple, a banana, these are not particularly the most flavorful foods around, like compared to, I don't know, like a mango or a kiwi, but they have much more nuance to me now that my taste buds have adjusted than a Twinkie, much less sugar, but much more sweetness, which is exactly what I want. More flavor, more sensation of flavor, even though it's much less sugar, much less fat, much less salt. So the idea of, if you offered me Ben and Jerry's right now, I would pick an apple over it every single time.
Josh, shifting directions to these current Joe Biden administration, he's got a lot of big plans for the climate. He reentered the Paris Climate Agreement, a lot of other things planned that he wants to do. He talked about them during his State of the Union address. But here we have China and India, which I believe are still the biggest polluters in the world. Do you think that Joe Biden needs to address China and India and what they are doing pollution-wise if he's going to make us cut back on our factories and other things?
Well, there's a big geopolitical situation. The most important thing that I think the United States can do is to lead if I'm going to lead anyone, I have to lead myself first. If I try to lead someone to do something I myself am not doing, it doesn't work very well. I think that if America wants to lead others, America has to lead itself first. And I think that I've cut back my emissions and my waste at least 90%. And that's just with improvements. This is not, if anyone heard that I cut back on emissions and thought sacrifice, they're not living my life. I lived about like the average American. I'd fly around on a couple times a year. I had the fridge plugged in. And now I change things when I realize that when I know it's going to improve my life. The average American just improving their life, you know, I can't quantify this exactly, but I would guess at least 50, 75% they could cut back just improving their life. Now, it might go against the grain. They might feel a swimming upstream, culturally speaking, but it's insanity, the amount of waste. I mean, I go to Washington Square Park, everyone's bringing disposable stuff. The trash cans are overflowing. There's litter everywhere. It didn't used to be like that.
Do you think that if we do change a lot of things, like Joe Biden wants to change with the Green New Deal and all kinds of other things that are up in the air right now, do you think if we do have leadership by example that China and India will change? Do you think it'll work?
I can't say for sure, but I think is the best hope. I think that we are leading. I think that we're leading now to say, oh, what can we do? We as individuals, but also we as a nation. One of my big examples is in New York in 2002, I think, they were talking about banning cigarettes inside restaurants or where the inside indoors. I mean, in your own apartment, that's your own deal, but in restaurants and stores and so forth. And people all said, if we do that, we're going to lose business because people like to have a drink after work. They like to relax and they like to have a smoke when they drink. We're going to lose business because people are going to go take the PATH trains across to New Jersey because it's, and they want to smoke when they have a drink. As it happened, the bill passed and there was no smoking allowed in restaurants and bars in New York City. And 2 or 3 years later, the opposite of what people predicted happened. New Jersey had to pass a smoking ban indoors because people were going from New Jersey to the clean air in the bars in New York. Likewise, with the Times Square right now has some cars in it, but a lot less, like a lot of it more is pedestrian now than it was before. Before they did that, people said, we're going to lose business. All the retail stuff, we want traffic to go through here so that people come by. We want them to be able to get off their taxis and so forth. Well, they made some of the streets pedestrian, or some of the areas pedestrian only, and foot traffic went up and business went up for these retail places. Now they, if you said to them, if you go to a Times Square store and say, do you want to go back to having cars going by? They'll say, no, we want to expand this. So there's a lot of cases where it goes the opposite of what people expect. CVS Drugs. I don't think it's called CVS Drugs anymore. I think it's called CVS Health. And their number one profit center, I believe, was cigarettes. And they chose to stop selling cigarettes. And within a year, I mean, their profits took a hit, but I believe that within 12 months of that decision, their profits were back up again and other stores followed. So there's a lot of places where people are 100% sure this will definitely hurt business and it doesn't. And the leaders, the ones who do it first, get followed. It was the case in New York. It was the case with CVS. It was the case with the pedestrian only areas.
Well, thank you so much to our guest tonight, Joshua Spodek. If people want to find out more about you, Joshua, where can they do that at?
So my name.com. So joshuaspodek.com. And everything's there. In the upper right corner, there's a link to the podcast and how to find me and how to reach me and things like that.
Excellent. Thank you so much to our guest, Joshua Spodek. And thank you for joining us tonight on After Dark with Rob and Andrew. Check us out and all the other shows over at AmericaOutloud.com. You can also find America Out Loud on iHeartRadio, Spotify, or Stitcher. We will see you guys next time. And remember to stand for something or you will fall for nothing.